Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Julie Tesh, President and CEO at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We are a private, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based in rural Minnesota, where we are dedicated to providing data-driven research on rural issues to help our policymakers make more informed decisions affecting rural people and places in our state. Today on our podcast, we're very excited to have Corey Heppelov with us today. He is a three-time Emmy Award-winning documentarian and TV anchor. Many of you who listen may be able to have seen him on the TV in the Twin Cities previously. Corey grew up in Pahrump, Minnesota, and he is also the director, writer, and host of the popular documentary series My Town, which serves to break down the popular misconceptions with the rural lifestyle, showing the opportunity, innovation, and beauty in our small towns and businesses. Welcome, Corey.
Julie, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, so excited to have you on here. Longtime fan, first time caller.
Well, it was great to meet you in person because I feel the same way. So
yeah, ditto. Oh, and I also have to say, my dad was very excited that I'm meeting, we're doing this today. So my dad says hello.
Oh, good. Well, tell him hi and that I'm thankful for your podcast and the work that you do here in Minnesota.
I will do that. He was actually rather jealous. He's like, oh. I'm like, well, maybe you can meet him someday. We'll see. But like, again, thank you again for being on here today, Corey. Why don't you tell our listeners just your background and a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Interesting story in that, I grew up in a small town. Julie, you mentioned Pahrump. And I'm so grateful to have grown up in Pahrump, this thriving small town in Western Minnesota. But my parents are from New York Mills. So just down the road. And for people that are listening who are not from the area, New York Mills and Pahrump, it's about an hour and 10 minutes east of Fargo. So in that Western Lakes Country corridor of Minnesota. And I'm so blessed. Like, I won the lottery. I had the two best parents in the world who were so supportive and loving and caring. And also, too, I would say the community in and of itself, which is something that I've experienced as I've left and chased my dreams, which I should just share a little bit on that story. And I mean, I knew what I wanted to do at 8 years old. I told my parents at eight that I'm going to be a TV news anchor in Minneapolis one day. I was laser focused. It's all I ever wanted to do. And so thankfully, and this is one of the misconceptions about and we can get into this later, but about rural education, oftentimes it's seen, well, there's small schools, they don't offer this or they don't offer that. And I find that to be a huge misconception because our school, which is a small school, had everything. And one of those, programs would have been the mass media program. Dr. Sandra Weiser Matthews was there. She's now down here in the cities at St. Mary's as a leader here. But she had this great energetic program that was introducing us to broadcast journalism and radio and all of these things. So I got to be involved really early and get that experience. Then went to Concordia College in Moorhead and got, involved there at Concordia On Air. And then after my sophomore year, I was, again, laser focused, very energetic in broadcast journalism, got an internship at a TV station in Fargo, and life was on track. I mean, it was great. I was going to college. They hired me back as a reporter. I got promoted to an anchor. And I thought, this is great. I'm going to work here until I achieve that dream and go to the Twin Cities. But I always say that, I had a plan and then God had a plan. And
funny how that happens.
Right. Yeah. And my plan was to just be in Minnesota the whole time. Well, Fargo in Minnesota. And the Lord, I always say, kind of kicked me out. I ended up, along with a bunch of other talented people, got laid off when our company was sold. The TV station was sold to a different company, got laid off. And so I worked all through college and then I graduated college without a job. So I had to look and I ended up with, moving out to Montana, 150 different resumes that I finally landed in Helena, Montana. So got my second shot, but you know, worked my way up from there. Helena, Montana, Elmira, New York, Rochester, New York, Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, and then got back home to Care 11 here, the Minneapolis station, or the NBC station here in Minneapolis. A dream come true. Very thankful. And I thought I would do that my entire life. But then rural came calling.
How that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
My gosh. So you went from, you were a cobber. So you went there in the Fargo, you went to Helena. So you went to Montana, then Texas, then
Then
New York,
upstate New York.
upstate New York. Okay. Then you've been around the country.
And I'm so thankful for it because I was able to meet so many different people, including my wife, but meet so many different people and learn about different cultures and different ways of living. And so that's why I say the Lord kind of kicked me out. I needed to go experience, and I needed to go experience different people and different locations and different towns. And I came back to Minnesota with a holistic sort of perspective.
Isn't that crazy how that works? I know you being from rural, I'm from rural as well. And I figured that St. Paul would kind of be always be my destination. And it was for like 20, well, 15, 20 years, however much, you know. But then, like you said, the Lord kind of kicks you out. And then I was surprised that I ended up back here too, 7 years ago, 8 years ago now. And so it's just funny how that goes. And, you know, something that we talk about a lot at the center is brain gain, but there's also brain drain. And the University of Minnesota Extension, Ben Winchester, has a lot of research on this. And, you know, we're always, unfortunately, in this society, we always focus on, not always, a lot of times focus on negative stereotypes and negative narratives. And one of them is that the brain drain in rural, that everyone's fleeing, everyone's going. And I really like how you said it's like, no, I left to meet new people, experience new things, and you're able to bring that back. And so now we call it the brain gain, you know, people like you and I coming back and helping these rural communities. And yeah, it's just so, it's so neat to hear your story that it's true, it's happening. You know, it's not just an antidote.
Well, and to your point, I don't know how that term became to be in the brain drain. Probably because it rhymes, and so then it gets catchy and it just catches on. But of course, there's going to be people who leave a rural region at 18, because if you want to go to higher ed, typically those are going to be in different towns or different cities or larger cities. But as Ben notes, the brain gain, we've seen that 30 to 50 demographic is moving back to rural. And in fact, since basically, well, since the pandemic more specifically, but even before then, we are seeing the highest rates of young people in that 30 to 50 range moving back to rural areas, the highest rates we've seen since the 1970s. But it's not anything brand new. It's just somehow this narrative got told and it got sold, and then it's caught on to where people believe it, when in reality, yeah, of course 18-year-olds are going to go and check out the world, but oftentimes they're moving back.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that. When I give presentations, a lot of times I'll mention, you know, I'll talk about, oh, you hear about people leaving rural, but 18-year-olds also leave Minneapolis, St. Paul, Burnsville, Blaine. That's what 18-year-olds do. And it's so funny because I end up getting a lot of people thinking like, huh, you're right. And I'm like, that's just the cycle of life. You know, some people stay, but a lot of people leave. And, you know, the thing that we talk about a lot building narrative is giving them somewhere to come back to. You know, it might not necessarily be the exact small town that you grew up in, but it might be the region. You know, what is it that the region offers? And you're seeing that, like you said, we have just really good migration. And on paper, it might be just incremental, but those small increments really add up over time. And so it's been fun to watch.
One of the things that, to your point, one of the things that I've been hearing and seeing a lot more recently in our rural towns, and I saw this firsthand in at KLN Family Brands in Pirum, where I grew up. But they have done such a good job of just building within the community, building relationships in the community. They certainly give of themselves within the community, and that's a whole nother story. But also building those relationships with you know, sophomores, juniors, and seniors in high school, and not putting pressure on them to be like, hey, come work here right after high school. Now, that is certainly you know, an option if that's for you to choose. But just building those relationships and saying like, hey, you know, go out and experience. But just also know that when you come back, we're going to be here. When you're ready to come back, we're going to be here for you. And we are making a difference in the community that you love. And I saw it firsthand with, you know, someone like Matt Nagel, who was a, you know, a 5-time state wrestling champion from Frazee, goes to University of Minnesota, is an All-American, goes out and lives his life. And all of a sudden he's, you know, 30 something going, why every time I come home here to Lakes Country, I never want to leave. Why don't we just live here? And KLN built out a position for him based on his strengths and his passions. And that's just one example of many of these thriving towns that say, hey, you don't have to stay here at 18, but just know that we're here for you. And no matter where you go or what you do, we're going to be excited for you and championing you. And I love that.
Yeah, that is so cool. That is so cool. And it's that community connection that they were able to do that, and I don't know, reach out to him, but they were able to come to that agreement and understanding. And he's like, yeah, kind of like looking at one of those billboards that says, what if you lived here, you'd be home by now.
Yeah, I love
that. What it says is kind of like, yeah, okay. I mean, and who wouldn't want to live in Lakes Country?
And now he's meeting with those same sophomores, juniors, and seniors, telling them his story and just saying like, hey, you know, just know that we are excited to get to know you. We will be your cheerleader for wherever you end up. But if you ever want to come back, we're here for you too.
And I think that's a key thing that you mentioned is talking with the students. You know, in this day and age with our smartphones, I'm guilty as charged being on smartphones a lot, but I don't feel like this younger generation knows exactly how to communicate well. And so I feel like the more that we can connect with them personally, whether that's in person or on Zoom or whatever, but just building that relationship, because the epidemic of isolation is real. And you definitely, you know, just being able to talk with them, what are you interested in? So he's really doing some great things.
Yeah, those personal conversations. I look at it, and I kind of look at this as somebody who, you know, graduated with a communications degree, but then also that's kind of the backbone of what we do. And I kind of look at it as when you think about how we're communicating with other people, you know, if we are, Julie, if you and I were in the same room here, we'd be communicating in a way, and I'd be able to, and you'd be able to pick up on all these nonverbals, but we'd also have the added context of, hey, before we started rolling, you walked into the office or I walked in and we were able to chit chat a little bit or to pick up this and pick up that. Communication, you pick up all these things. You pick up facial tics and all of that stuff. Now go down to the next level. Like here, we're participating on Zoom, and it's the next best thing. Like this is better than a phone call. I get to see your facial expressions. You get to see mine. You get to hear my tone and my voice. Now take that down to a phone call, which is what we grew up on, right? Mm-hmm. Now you don't get the facial. You lose the facial expressions and that sort of context, but you still get tone.
Mm-hmm.
But now today, with text communication being really the driver in the primary form, whether that's through texting or emailing or whatever, you lose all of it. All you see is words. So you lose the full context of, hey, you don't see the facial expressions. You don't see you don't hear the tone. So you miss out on a lot of that. So we're getting a lot of miscommunication as well because of that. So for instance, like one quick story with my wife and I know my wife better than I know anybody else, right? and throughout the day, you know, we text each other back and forth on little things here or there. Hey, how's your day going? Yeah, do you need me to pick this up or whatnot? And at the end of the day, you know, we'll always, hey, I'm headed home or whatever. If she doesn't text me with an emoji at the end, I'm going, what went wrong in her day?
Oh, no.
Did I do something wrong? Did I fail? Did I miss something? Now, she could be completely fine, But I'm now, because of this, I'm
Wow.
projecting different things onto this text that, you know, so think
Yep.
about this. I know her better than anybody. Now we're texting or emailing or sending messages back and forth to complete strangers all the time.
Right.
And so there's so much miscommunication that goes on, and these are just layers added into personal communications. But then also too, when you talk about the rural narrative being portrayed here and there in social media or through you know, I guess old media or news outlets, it's the same thing.
Yep, absolutely. Gosh, when you sometimes if I'm texting somebody and it's just a simple answer and the answer is okay, but then it's like, ooh, will that be taken wrong? Is that okay or not? Should I go on? It's like, oh my gosh, this is just difficult. I'd rather just talk to somebody. You know, talking about the rural narrative again, it's interesting in our work. A lot of times we hear that narrative, you know, rural is dying or whatnot. But I always like to think that rural is changing. And, you know, there are towns out there that aren't doing as well as they used to, or maybe they're not even around anymore. But something we like to think about is that rural is changing. You know, I'm from a town of 201, and we have three churches, a post office, a bank, and a bar. And a trucking company. You know, it's very different than what it was. And some people may drive across and be like, oh, Main Street's dead. It's dead. Well, it looks different. All of the houses in our town are full. We're now a bedroom community for Mankato, which I think is pretty good, you know, because it's full. And so trying to help people to realize like it's not always going to be like it's 1950 or 1960 where there's, you know, two grocery stores and a bowling alley and everything. And so, but it's different. And so, you know, how are you seeing that out and about in your travels?
And changing and different isn't necessarily bad.
Exactly.
I think we have this misconception of what 1950 was like, to be quite honest. We
Yes.
remember happy days and we remember the white picket fence, but those weren't great days for everybody either. So I think we project sort of as a culture project, well, that was an amazing time and this and that, but we kind of forget what it was actually day to day. The other point too, Julie, that you had mentioned about, you know, the narrative being that small towns are dying. I don't like that that is used as a paintbrush for all communities. You don't necessarily hear that about urban areas, and I can guarantee you not every large city is growing either.
Right.
And so yeah, I think that is basically the foundation of our docuseries, My Town, is that the rural narrative has quite frankly been out of control for a long time. Those old stereotypes of every small town is dying, there's nothing there for you. There's, you know, Main Street is boarded up. People there are just uneducated and racist. Those are like the common keywords that get associated with our small towns, and it does not reflect the reality of what is happening in our small towns. And so
Exactly.
there's a lot that went into, you know, how that became, those became the stereotypes. There are certainly some politics that got weaved in through that as well and continue. I'm not necessarily interested in figuring out and diagnosing how and why and who's to blame for all of that. We're more interested in helping clear up the narrative and offering positive solutions with our My Town series. So what we did is based on Ben Winchester's research, based on, I know, a former guest that you guys had with Eric Osberg in Otter Tail County, some of his ideas as well. We teamed up early on in 2019. I'd kind of referenced this earlier that rural came calling. It literally came calling. Like Eric from Otter Tail County, where I grew up, Perm is in Otter Tail County, called me in 2019 and was like, hey, we kind of have this problem. Nobody looks at us as a place to live, work, and play. And he's like, you know, we've thought about doing some interesting tourism videos or stuff like that, but he's like, I just want to reach out and see what you thought. Like, is there something we could do that's kind of unique? And I give him in Otter Tail County so much credit because even early on, they were thinking outside the box. Like, how can we help basically fashion our story differently? How can we break through this crowded, noisy thing called the internet, where everybody has these assumptions about what it's like here in Otter Tail County, and how can we tell an authentic story? And so we teamed up, and I kind of went back to them and said, here's kind of what I'm dealing with in my life as somebody who left at 18. And now I'm married with three young kids, and I'm looking back and going, boy, I kind of missed out on a lot of stuff. And there's a lot back there at home that I love and I value. So why don't I go back there? And we meet with people who choose to live. And there's always a power in the word choice, right? Because people could be anywhere, but these talented people are choosing to live in this rural county in these small towns. And you just never hear rural portrayed that way.
Right.
So we teamed up together and we created a docuseries first called Rural by Choice. And that was basically to highlight the county by choosing to meet with people who choose to live in Otter Tail County. And we did different things that are unique to the county. So we did that first. We did two seasons, 12 episodes, won an Emmy for Outstanding Lifestyle Series. And what we found is that people just love these stories because it's not how you are typically told what it's like to live in a rural community. So, based on that work, the Brookshire Company saw that work. Now, the Brookshire Company, I know I'm going a lot of different
No,
ways
I
here.
like this. I'm like you obviously are a communicator because you're predicting all of my questions. So keep on going.
So the Brookshire Company in 2022 saw Rural by Choice and said, hey, we are an economic development company. We work with a lot of rural communities across the upper Midwest. Could we take this form of storytelling and partner with our communities to help them tell their story, to champion them, to be rural advocates, along with the other initiatives that we have that are providing, building businesses and bringing people and jobs to rural markets. I was like, absolutely, because we had kind of with Rural by Choice, we had done two seasons. It was probably not going to be able to do a third. And we just felt that this was such a strong message to continue. So I joined the Brookshire Company and we launched My Town with the intention of let's take this storytelling model, create a new documentary series. So in 2023, we teamed up with seven new towns across four states. We started filming in 2024, and those episodes came out last fall. We went to Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And now, Julie, this I start in May. We start filming eight new towns across five states for season two. And you said it off the top. Our mission is to break down the popular misconceptions with the rural lifestyle, showing the opportunities in our small towns.
That is so awesome. And I think, did you just put out a call for season three for communities to apply?
It's been a dream come true. I just, the excitement that these communities have. We do have an application process, so the excitement when they are selected, and then really, when they start this 18 to 24 month process with us, they're just so excited, which is what you want to see. And that's one thing that gets lost oftentimes too, is just the community leaders in these small towns and the way that people step up and the way that they work together. And those are really the stories that we want to show, the people who choose to be there and make those places better places to live. So yeah, season three, we are in the process of accepting applications now, and we'll be filming in 2026 as well.
Wow, that's crazy. We're not even halfway through 2025 and you're thinking about 2026. That's great. And I think, mentioning something about you're highlighting all of these great things in small towns. Nobody's going to move to a small town because it's bad. I think we're our own worst enemy a lot of the time. Oh, my town isn't growing. My town is this or that. It's like, no, there's plenty of good things. Nobody will move to your town if you're not promoting it or telling its story. Are you able to give us a preview of maybe one or two of the stories that you're going to be covering here this year
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
unveiling here?
For sure. But first, I love your comment there because our message to our communities that we partner with is basically that I know it seems it seems out of character for us in the Midwest. We're used to just sitting back and we're humble people, right?
Yeah.
We are humble, blue collar, hardworking people, and always have been. We don't like to raise our hand and say, like, we're really good at this or we do this well. We just don't. It's not in our nature. So that's what we do.
Thank you.
We encourage our communities to say, it's time. You can't just sit back and wait for people to find you or discover all the wonderful things in your community. You have to be the one to raise your hand. You have to say, yes, this is an awesome place to live, and here are all the reasons why. And so we really partner with that and encourage our communities to do that. With also to the point that you made, I always share this with any speech that I give or community that we work with. It starts with the community leadership. We have to eliminate the limited language.
Yes.
And by that, I mean, do not quit saying, if it's in your vocabulary to say, well, back in the day, or if only we had gotten this project, or if only we had that, you have to eliminate that stuff. That is thinking in the past, that is limited language. Eliminate that stuff because you need to be focusing in on all the wonderful qualities. And I can tell you, we get application after application, and there are so many wonderful things here in the upper Midwest in our small towns, so many different things. But sometimes people locally, they get so used to it that they forget
Yeah.
what a positive it is. So we come in and say, like, what about that thing? That is amazing. So no, that's absolutely core to our messages. We got to raise our hands here in the upper Midwest and tell people.
Absolutely. We just put out a report on migration about a month ago, and talking about birth rates and deaths and then just people moving around, and we need people moving here. People like myself and my two coworkers, we did not help with the population. We have cats. And so, they're not exactly working in the workforce, but we need people to be moving here. And hopefully when they see your stories and hear your stories, they'll be like, oh, that sounds like a really cool place to live. I'd move there. It's getting people from other places, other states, other countries, wherever that is, just to move to our really cool places.
Totally. And I do think that we've been a little stagnant here in Minnesota. You can see the demographics and the population. We're just not growing at the rate we need to be growing. However, I think when you look at sort of the climate changes and you look at down south, you look at access to water, Minnesota specifically is the future. So we have to act like it. We have to act like that and get people here and tell them all the wonderful things that there are here. And also, I know people say that winter's a barrier, but you know what's interesting? We have neighbors who are from Alabama,
Oh gosh, okay.
and had never lived outside of Alabama or whatnot, and they don't even care. Like, they're like, yeah, it's a little cold here in the winter, but you know what? I would take this over the heat any day of the week. Like they, and then you think about the infrastructure here and the jobs. And I mean, Minnesota truly has it all. We have to act like it.
Exactly. I don't
So.
know about you, but when I lived other places, I mean, I had traveled abroad and everything before, but I just kind of assumed that everywhere was kind of like Minnesota in a way, like our civic activity,
Yeah.
just our activity in communities and everything. And the other places I lived, I'm like, oh, do you mean that's not standard? Or like our education. I know that our education system gets a bad rap a lot, but we have a phenomenal education system in Minnesota. Working with some other states around the country, it we're really good at putting ourselves down, but we have phenomenal education here, phenomenal business, phenomenal community involvement, and I just always took that for granted.
We have friends who are in Florida and they are like, look, I mean, it's not even an option. We have to send our kids to private school.
Right.
And here, yes, there are certainly issues with our public schools. But yes, we have set a very high standard of education here in Minnesota. And it's not just even elementary, middle school, high school, our secondary education too. We have great options all the way up from, the University of Minnesota to, your Yales of the Midwest, like Concordia,
Great. Absolutely. You got to go to Yale, or got to go to Yale, got to go to Concordia and get your ring, right?
I'm wearing it right now.
Is
Very
it, is that still a thing?
Oh yeah, that's very
Okay,
proud.
because I was going to say, I'm like, I know a cobber when I see them. We actually have, I had an intern from Concordia a couple years ago with the Citizens League, and he's from South Minneapolis, Latino, and at Concordia studying business, and he wanted to learn about policy, and it was so cool. And it's so cool have, to watch him now because he's graduating here in May. And just how wonderful Concordia has been for him. And coming from South Minneapolis and going to Moorhead, that's a change.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to specifically learn about rural and small towns and what that looks like. And so he got a great education there, and he's going to do really good things. So that's a nice little plug for Concordia.
Well, that's great. And I think, the Fargo-Moorhead area too is really growing. They have done such innovative things there. And, when I was in college, we never went to downtown Fargo. And now they've totally revitalized that. And it's growing and it shows. I mean, the median age is like 32 and people are raising kids there. And so they've done a lot of nice things, but not to take us off the Minnesota track, but
Still, yes, Moorhead, Fargo, Moorhead, whatever.
you had asked, and I kind of took us in a different direction, but you had asked about a couple of stories or previews. So we're going to two towns in Minnesota, two in North Dakota, two in South Dakota, one in Iowa, and one in Nebraska for season two.
Okay.
But I'll tell you the two in Minnesota, which is probably more pertinent to the audience. In season one, we did Pearl, Willmar, Farmington, and Chisholm. So four completely different towns with four completely different stories, different regions, different populations. And that's really a part of our purpose too, is to show that rural can look different. A Farmington wouldn't necessarily check the box for me being rural growing up, that in that it's 30 minutes from downtown, it's 23,000 people, yet this was a town that was 4,000 people 30 years ago. And
Correct.
so it's really grown, and they really identify as rural. And then, to go up to the Iron Range and to meet with people there, and that was such a beautiful story. We get so many comments on that one. And Pearl being our home, and then of course Willmar. The intersection, a lot of people don't think of small towns as being an innovative hub, and that's what Willmar is. The way that that town has been at the precipice of ag and innovation and technology coming together for decades, and also too with welcoming people. You've seen an immigration boom there, and so our story kind of talks about all of that and the diversity downtown as well. But for season two, we're going to Fairmont, Minnesota.
Nice. Nice. I
Beautiful.
was just through Fairmont last week.
It's so beautiful. Five
Nice.
different lakes are surrounding the town. They're the bacon capital of the United States. And so we'll be on a pig farm there.
Nice.
So we'll be on a pig farm for that one, enjoying the lakes. And they got a wonderful school district there as well. It seems like every year they're in the state tournament for a few different things. So and I always think like sports isn't everything, but typically if you're good in sports, you're also good in academics. And it's just like a school structure that you have good teachers and good administration that really prides itself on its people. So we have that story. And then we have St. Joseph, Minnesota. I mean, just an eclectic town in Western Minnesota, one that I've known about and driven past for so many years, and excited to stop off 94 and meet with people. We're going to meet with a couple different entrepreneurs there who have started businesses. That downtown is really rocking. Also in the region, they through CenterCare and the University of Minnesota, they've got this new rural healthcare program that is specifically training med students to go back to a rural town and to serve specifically in rural markets. And we thought, what a neat story to help service our rural towns. So all of that will be included in that St. Joseph story as well.
How exciting. I love that you're telling the stories. Like Fairmont being the bacon capital. Yes, you drive through Martin County and it's a lot of hog barns, but and then the CenterCare partnership with the University of Minnesota, it's revolutionary,
Yeah.
because we have such access issues in rural Minnesota. So them training people that will go right into rural areas is just fantastic. So I'm really glad that you're highlighting that.
Yeah, we have one young lady who just graduated from St. Ben's, and she was accepted into the program, and super talented. She's from Foley, Minnesota, and
Sure.
she went to St. Ben's, and now she's going to be in the program there. She's also competing in triathlon this summer,
Oh,
so
wow.
health is very important to her. And I think a part of our story is she's going to get me swimming in a lake with her and running and bike cycling, and we're doing a mini triathlon together.
You
So
have fun with that.
yeah, hopefully I survive it, but
Like swimming in lakes is not my thing, so I'm just like, ooh, no.
oh no, I grew up in the lake, so
I'm in
I'm
southern
fine.
Minnesota, and the lakes change, turn over in about end of June, and then you just stop swimming in them. But that sounds fun. That'll be a fun one to watch. I'm so excited. Last question. What would you know, we talk about there's a perceived urban-rural divide, and some people say, yes, there's a divide, and others say, no, there's not. What's one thing you wish that your urban counterparts knew about rural?
Boy, that's a
It's a loaded question. We could talk about it for days, but one or two
yeah.
things that what would you like them to know?
I think that so with my town, what we've discovered is we have four main buckets, our audience members, four main buckets. And it starts with rural by choice. So people who grew up in a rural town, they never left. They're proud of their rural roots. They would be rural by choice. The second being the second would be boomerangs. So the people who grew up in a rural town, they moved away, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I kind of miss where I grew up, or I love the values there. Maybe you get married and have kids, all of a sudden you boomerang back. The third bucket would be rural curious. Now that is one that I've sort of just deemed because I see these and I hear from these people all the time. People who you may have grown up in a rural town or you may have grown up in an urban town, but you're living in an urban setting right now and you're kind of tired and you're kind of like, is there something more? And you're just a little bit unsettled. And you've maybe even thought about, going back or checking out a rural town. Now, the mainstream narrative has told you, well, why would you do that? There's nothing there.
Right.
So, our stories hit those people that says, hey, go. Just go look, keep an open mind. You don't have to move there, but maybe you want to go check it out. And I want to be clear, like our stories don't say rural is better than urban. That's not the point.
No.
What our stories say is that, hey, rural exists and
Yep.
it might be what you're looking for, and it's probably not what you think it is. And so that's kind of hitting those people pretty hard. And then to your point, the urbanites, that would be the fourth bucket. People who grew up in a city, have stayed in the city. They have, and not everybody, but oftentimes these misconceptions about the rural communities and what it's all about. So that's kind of how we see the audience. And really, when you look at that, that's everybody. Like
It
my town hits everybody and it speaks to everybody. And so for those urbanites in that fourth bucket, I think my advice would be that there's probably some preconceived notions of what you think urban is like. And usually those are based off, pop culture, the news. But one thing I always bring up with people is that, look, and this is not a commentary on broadcast journalism or news outlets, but they're not going to go to the small town unless something bad happens, right?
Right. That's
They
so true. So true. A tornado hits it.
fire.
Yeah.
Like a murder, a death, like whatever it might be, they're going for that and they'll hustle out for that, but they're not going to go to the everyday stuff. So what this does is it speaks to a mostly urban audience that is saying, oh boy, that small town, or that's the only touch point they ever have with that small town. So they're thinking like, boy, that's the way it is there. And it's also leaving people in rural towns frustrated because they're like, we're being portrayed like this when that's not the reality, and that's the only time we're on the news is for something like that. And the same thing with a Hallmark movie. The free Hallmark movie is, boy, I failed in the city, and now I got to go back to my small hometown and live it. Like,
I
Those
gotta go be in a cook baking contest in the fall.
pie eating contest, and those are just like they're tired narratives.
They
So
are.
I would just say that, you might have this perception that a small town is this way or that way, or it aligns like this, passionately political like this, whatever that might be. I can guarantee you that's not exactly the truth. And so it's helpful to watch these stories. It's helpful to go out and experience yourself and just meet with people, because what I always say, and politics drives a lot of this, but there are 10% of people who are way on the left, and there are 10% people who are way on the right, and there's 80% who are in the purple, who are like, yeah, I kind of lean this way, but you know what? You make a good point, and I think we could have. That's what small town is. 80% or more, with people, working together for the common good. That is what our stories are all about. They're showcasing that. That is what defines our rural towns.
I love it. And where can people find, where can they watch My Town?
Yeah, please subscribe, watch on YouTube, just My Town series. They can watch there. They can also follow along on Facebook, My Town series, or Instagram. And as of yesterday, we're on TikTok now too. So
Ooh.
yeah. But I'm more focused. Everyone should subscribe and watch on YouTube. That's the best platform to do it. And so yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm excited to watch this new season. Very excited. Thank you so much, Corey, for taking time out of your busy schedule and being with us today. And hopefully we can talk again in the future and learn more and see more about the stories that you're covering in rural Minnesota and the Midwest.
Well, thank you, Julie, and too. I know your dad's listening, and he's very, very proud of the work that you guys are doing to champion Minnesota. So thank you,
Oh,
Julie.
thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for listening in today.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.